Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Monday morning. It's 9:13. Ray is in for Joe at this time. It is the Roundtable panel. We have a great panel in store for you today. Alan Shartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, Jim Hendler, Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson. You may join us if you wish. Panel at WAMC.org is the email address. Panel at WAMC.org.
So what shouldn't we do?
Thank you for segueing into prompt, So here are the rules, kids. If you're emailing us, keep the letters brief. Paragraph is usually good. Three constitutes a manifesto. That's right out. Don't include links, no attachments, no abbreviations, and for heaven's sake, proofread. Alan will be reading these things.
And which is even worse.
We have to help him as it is. So if you proofread, we're in good shape here. Good morning, all.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, I visited Joe in the hospital up in Saratoga.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing fine. You know, it's going to take a long time for this rehab to happen.
Right.
His wonderful wife, Kelly, was there, you know, and a guy who had been on the trip with him was there.
Okay. And so for those who tuned in Friday, what happened is kind of an international incident. He fell down some stairs in Dublin and did, like, astounding damage
knees,
to both knees
first.
Yeah, okay. And it's going to be a while.
Right.
Yes.
Rehab, it'll take a while.
Well, we love him, and I got to tell you, the number of letters and mail and people who are saying, tell Joe to get well, have been extraordinary and really wonderful to see.
And it's, you know, we're thinking of Joe. If the medication is allowing, he's probably listening right now. So, hello, Joe.
Hello.
Sad news to begin the show and also some good news. The sad news, of course, Ed Digg, local news anchor, a legend in this area, passed away over the weekend at age 76. And, boy, define a legend.
Yeah, he was.
He was one.
He was great. He was a mensch, too. He was a good guy. He always treated everyone with respect. When I was younger, there was a time when I was younger and doing my flack stuff for politics early on, you know, I would bring him stuff. And, you know, he was just very respectful and helpful of those of us who were coming up the ranks, whether we were in the media or, like I am, outside of it, pushing in. And he just was a nice guy. And I was sad to see him leave the air because I think it took something with him. He took a sense of professionalism with him, and it's a great loss.
Well, Alan, of course, worked with him for years and years. So, Alan, your thoughts?
Well, he was extraordinary. He was, of course, he had an engineering education. He went to RPI, and he was brilliant. I mean, forget about the education. He was just brilliant. And the thing about him was I would be on with him almost every single night of the week and for all of those years. And whatever position I took, no matter how tenable or untenable, he would take the other side and quite frequently beat me under the table.
Kick you under the table or just beat you under the table?
He was something else again. And it was so much fun. That's the thing I loved about him. He could always bring happiness to the people around him. He had a technique which Dave Gustina and I always used to talk about, which was called he would always find your point of weakness, and then he would give it to you. And this was called being dagged.
Oh, yes, legendary.
And he would dag you. There was one time he was with Mario Cuomo, and Cuomo got so funny with him, he took his scissors and cut off Dagg's tie. Just cut off.
Lydia Kolbita had some beautiful things to say about him. There's a great piece in the Times Union, and one thing that she said I thought was great. She said that despite all the pain Dagg was in toward the end, you knew he was 10 times better than your best. And that was a nice thing for Lydia.
It was. And she's a wonderful woman, of course.
And the good news, of course, is the Supreme Court says Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been released from a Baltimore hospital where she had been treated for a possible infection. The 86-year-old Ginsburg has returned to her home in Washington, doing well, according to a court spokeswoman. Ginsburg spent two nights at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore after experiencing chills and fever. They gave her some IV antibiotics and fluids, and she's doing okay.
Well, if people in the United States are praying for anybody, they ought to be praying for Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yep.
Because it is all that is between that court, which right now is in conservative hands, but it's got Roberts, who may, in certain situations, go the other way. If Ginsburg disappears, there's going to be a fight over that Supreme Court nomination, the likes of which nobody has ever seen.
Explosive.
Well, I'm sorry.
It'll be explosive. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, now we are in that time period now before the next election that if she were to step down.
That's right.
What the heck is Mitch McConnell going to say if he says, we're going ahead with this?
Right.
He's going to say.
Change in circumstances.
He's
already said
it's a different president.
Yeah. He's going to say it's different.
It's different.
It's different now.
Right.
Well, who's the guy who said it's different? Was it...
it was put through Moscow Mitch, or... Oh, sorry.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Moscow D'Amato Mitch. Who said that? That was then, this is now?
Oh, no. D'Amato, when asked by a former incendiary reporter in our area, was walking next to him, but you said so-and-so before, he said, that was then, and this is now.
That's very good. You're like Rich Little. That was pretty good.
I've been practicing for years.
Roundtable panel, WAMC's Alan Shartok is here, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, Tetherless World Professor of Computer Web and Cognitive Sciences at RPI and Director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration, Jim Hendler, political consultant and lobbyist, Libby Post, also Albany Law School professor and director of the Immigration Law Clinic, Sarah Rogerson here. It's the Roundtable Panel. It's a full house here in Studio A. You can join us by emailing panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We've gone over the rules. You know the rules. Follow the rules and write us if you wish. Hong Kong's pro-democracy opposition won a stunning landslide victory in weekend local elections, in a clear rebuke to city leader Carrie Lam over her handling of violent protests that have divided the semi-autonomous Chinese territory. Wu Chi-wei, leader of the city's biggest pro-democracy party, said Monday the bloc swept nearly 90% of 452 district council seats, which will help it take unprecedented control of 17 out of 18 district councils. Now, let's see how Beijing reacts. Jim Hendler.
I think the big question is how China's going to handle it, how Hong Kong itself is going to handle it, because now you have a basically a parliament that doesn't agree with the current ruling council. And, you know, exactly how that's going to play out, we need to see. But the violence on the streets has been terrible, and to suddenly see it turn into an electoral victory. The interesting thing on this one, by the way, is not only was turnout huge, but youth turnout made a huge difference, a hint to our own youth demographics.
One would hope.
Here.
Yep.
Please.
Exactly what I thought.
Well, one wonders, because I know that in the first elections they had over there, they had the candidates had to be, as I remember it, approved by the party. Obviously, this time something else is happening because all the pro-democracy people are winning. 85% of them are winning. So did the party give up on approval?
No, the party actually ruled out a number of candidates.
They did.
So, you know, I mean,
so they took the best available.
How far down they can go down. But
they took the best available.
I think you have to have had, I don't know the exact rules, but I was reading something that said, you know, what they do is they charge people, and then if you've been charged, you can't hold one of these seats. You know, how many, you can't charge 800.
Wow.
This is not going to end well. Don't you have that feeling?
Yes.
This is winning electorally did not make Beijing feel any better about the way things are proceeding. And the long-term agreement is that Hong Kong is going to go back to Peking. It's going to become part of mainland China. So I don't see how we end up in a good place in any of this.
There's a single word which you should all remember, and that's Tiananmen. Mm-hmm. Because that's when they are totally frustrated, they'll use force. It's that simple.
Yeah.
I'm afraid you're right.
Yep.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org. Haven't heard anything from Sarah. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
What do you think?
I was also struck by reports over the weekend about pro-democracy protests pro-freedom protests in Baghdad and other places all across the world, and I'm not saying that what happens in Hong Kong is a harbinger for the rest of us, but certainly the struggle is the struggle of our time right now, and it'll be interesting to see, because China is such a powerhouse, a rival to the United States, exactly how this is going to play out. And geographically, it could have wide ramifications, not just for their democracy, but democracy across the world.
And we are hearing reports, printed reports in esteemed newspapers, that China is becoming the new Cold War opponent for the United States.
Well, China has an alternative view of the world order, and it's a clear alternative to the United States, and we have receded. And again, Hong Kong is a good example. You do not have a statement of support and congratulations from anywhere in this mm-hmm. administration to Hong Kong, and that's appalling.
That's
same with Iraq.
Although, just to be clear on this particular one, right? So Hong Kong has a ruling council that has about 1,200 members, I think, something like that. There's a much smaller piece of that, which is the district council. So they're only a percentage of it. So it does flip a lot of the power, but it still leaves most of the people who are in the government or the appointed people are still pro-Beijing. So you haven't really fixed the problem yet. It's not like some countries where a parliament, you know, the local elections flip the parliament. So it would be
like
really
chicken.
Interesting to see. But also some of the more conservatives are starting to change, largely because they see the country mm-hmm. moving.
But like chicken soup, it doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
And also, it remains to be seen whether the woman who is the governor now the governor.
Governor. Mm-hmm.
You know, whether she's appointed or by Beijing or appointed by this smaller group. The pro-democracy people made some inroads in that smaller group. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
It is interesting because when she was really laying down the law and everybody came out into the streets, the word got out that she wanted to quit. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, she wasn't quitting.
Right.
I have a feeling the telephone rang, you know, and she got the word.
You know, you mentioned the Cold War, and I saw that piece in the news on Friday that our next Cold War adversary is China. My question is, haven't we been in a Cold War with China and Russia? Hasn't it been continuous since 1940-whatever, regardless of what we call it? It is what it is, right?
Well, I'm going to say something that's probably ignorant, but I will say that there's a difference between China and Russia. China has become a major trading partner, you know, of the United States. The Russians are still the Russians. They have oil, of course, but that's different.
Well, they have they want their natural gas to be pipelined throughout the world because that's their only thing that they really have to trade with. You know, yes, China is a trading partner of ours, but it's not a great relationship. It still hasn't been settled. There's still plenty of tariffs going on and plenty of hurt.
Well, Jim Hensler, as long as there is cyber activity under the cloak of darkness all the time, one attacking the other. This is essentially an undeclared intelligence war, right?
So there's that going on. There's actually a public document that came out recently that was released by our government, and I don't have a link to it. I'll try to find one.
Okay, no
but
links, please. No abbreviations.
No links, no abbreviations. I will tweet it somewhere. But they were looking at Chinese doctrine. So we've been so our military studies what our enemy's plans are, obviously. And
what do you mean doctrine?
It's very clear the plans. What would happen if a war started? So Russia
doctrine?
Russia doctrine. Yes.
Every day I would learn something.
Yeah. Stalin had a doctrine.
Yeah.
That's another story. Go ahead.
So in the traditional Cold War, us versus Russia, there's an area between Russia and Europe called the Volga Gap, and all the military activity focused on what would happen there. With China, you don't have that kind of single place where things are going to play out. But the other thing is when they started studying what we could about China, China's plans are not to go into a military attack until they have already disabled us. So they are doing significant
harm to the United States.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They're doing significant investment in things that, like cyber, like AI, things like that, that they hope will give them
shut
a significant
down.
Advantage. And without
presumably
going into
we
details
are doing the
that
same
I can't
thing.
Go into details.
And that's as far as war and attacking us. in the world. China is has offered to third world and developing countries a different model. You no longer have to pick between the United States and it used to be Russia. Now there's China, and you don't have to worry about human rights. You don't have to. They'll lend you money, lots of money, in terms that look good to begin with, and you become encaptured by them. It is a methodical, long-term structure that is working. And we are not paying attention to it.
Well, they are building infrastructure for countries in Southeast Asia, in Africa, and things like that.
Eastern Europe, they're in the old Yugoslavia they're taking.
And interestingly, I know you have to go to a break, Ray, but interestingly, I think that Trump, who I have always felt was in the clutches of the old Soviet, new Russian hierarchy, does not mess with Russia, but he does occasionally with China.
All right, let's take a break here. It's the Roundtable panel, and you can join us by emailing panel@wamc.org. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable. It's Monday morning, 9:33. Simmer down there, Sparky. It's an exciting Roundtable panel. Rosemary Armeo is here. Libby Post is here. Sarah Rogers and Alan Shartok and Jim. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We like to call him Jim, but his name is Jim Hendler. You can just call him Jim or Jimmy.
Can I call you Al?
Call me whatever you like.
Okay, I'll call him late to dinner.
Now, Alan, you know,
call me.
Everybody's here for the long haul today.
Yes, we
and
are.
Henceforth.
What the reason is, we're going to go to 10 minutes to 11 now, and at 11 o'clock you'll have your Congo Corner. The reason we're doing this is there are so many impending investigations and things going on that we think this is a good time to raise that amount of time that we're doing.
An extra 25 minutes.
That's
or so.
Right. And we'll evaluate if you like it out there, and if you don't like it, you'll let us know.
Right.
That's important.
Exactly. And by the way, speaking of letting us know things, panel@wamc.org is the email address. It's panel@wamc.org. And I know we have some letters already.
All right. Ray, thanks for that introduction.
Sure, Alan.
Yes, sure, Ray. Elias wrote, Mitch has already announced that he is ready to seat a new justice on the last day of Trump's term. He's an unscrupulous con man without shame. Anybody?
Yeah, yes.
All in favor, say aye.
Hard agree.
He is, however, it's on Obama that he never threatened that action the last time. It never went to court. And I do not forgive him for that. Now it stands.
Okay. I'm sorry, Rosemary, you've left me in the dust.
Merrick Garland's treatment in Congress was never challenged in court by the executive who made the nomination.
Because it wasn't illegal.
What do you mean it wasn't illegal?
It was not. It was within the rules. I mean,
the Constitution says the president gets to nominate, and then the Senate has to advise and consent about.
But it doesn't
confirming.
Say when.
It doesn't, so that you go to court and have a court decision on it. Now it's left up to this man, McConnell, that we all think is disreputable and horrible.
Well,
it should not have been left up to McConnell.
Except that McConnell, of course, is the voice of the Republican majority. And they are going to do what he says, and we know that, Rosemary, day after day after day. They are, cowardly to a point that, I've never seen.
They've redefined the word.
The Democrats can fight with each other.
I think all of this is right. I don't disagree. But the Democrats need a different way to fight. I think we're seeing it with Adam Schiff, too, who is letting people say, oh, you want to ignore my subpoena? Oh, okay, well, we don't want to fight you in court. It'll take too long. The way you change things permanently is to make a law or to fight it in court. And Democrats are not doing either that I see.
So I agree with you mostly, Rosemary. But I wonder at this point whether what we're actually seeing is some very clever backstage politics, because two things occur to me, right? One is, given this court, Mm-hmm. Right. There's reason to believe that if these obstruction, you know, if these executive
they
privileges cases came up, they would lose, at which
Correct.
Point they would lose any chance of getting these witnesses.
Correct.
The other one is, remember that Judge Roberts, Justice Roberts, will preside over the Senate hearing, which is one of their only
right.
hopes of mm-hmm. getting there. If
he wants
asks
a hearing.
These mm-hmm. people to appear, then it's going to be awfully hard for them to go to the court. So I have a feeling
Listen.
That some of this might be real politic, but I'm also worried that it's just fear.
To go back to my Obama thing, and I've said this before, I'm sorry to be redundant, but Merrick Garland, that was a whole different court, and it would have been eight
Agreed.
Justices
Agreed.
Making the decision, and it was not
yep.
overwhelmingly conservative at
yep.
the time.
Yep.
It was a very bad miscalculation
yes.
based Agreed. on the mistaken idea that Hillary would win and all
mm-hmm.
would be well with the world.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I hear you. I just want to, just one point on that is that President Obama was a constitutional law professor. So I imagine that he did that calculus. And I agree that maybe it was made on false premises. But
well, yes, Sarah. And by the time this thing wins its way through the courts,
right.
there would be no impeachment.
I agree.
And
yep.
they think they have enough for an impeachment. I think they do. I think it is their constitutional responsibility. As we were talking about this morning on the 7:45 bit, you know, George Washington talked about foreign interference
mm-hmm.
in our political process and how dangerous that was. And that is exactly, you know, what we're seeing now.
Alan, is it really an either or? Could they not proceed with impeachment? I agree. I think there's more than enough evidence right now based on the people who have testified and also press for paying attention to a subpoena.
Yeah. Well, you know, Rosemary, there's another issue here that I think we may be ignoring. The way the process works is that the House of Representatives, the Democrats, in other words, put forward a prosecution. They're the ones who, like the prosecution in a trial, present the case in the beginning. Now, it's true they don't have the votes, but they can do it in a very persuasive way that is going to make a difference in the way the purples, because that's what this is all about.
That's
folks.
What this is all
purples
about.
Purples see this.
It's all about the independent voters, that 30%,
yep.
and November of 2020.
And the recent polling, admittedly
it's early,
is showing that independents are moving away from the idea of impeachment as a good idea. So
well,
the Democrats are not winning so far, at least according to
and
early
let me,
evidence.
And let me back something Rosemary said on Friday and got in a lot of trouble for.
Yeah,
she said
it.
Nunes was
oh,
being very
on.
Effective. Everybody jumped on her. But you know what? He's playing to the social media.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing to the 6-second soundbite. And it's effective. It's coming into not just Fox News, not just the conservative
yeah.
media, but it's crossing over, and that's what's impacting the independents. And you have independents
right.
who are saying things like, you know, he's not letting them have their votes. He's not letting them have their witnesses.
Jim, let it be known that you're irritating Alan for some reason.
You are.
I've been trying to do that for a long time.
Well,
let me give you some pointers.
As you know,
I'm not a professional.
This is the same Nunes that we caught hiding in the weeds outside of the White House mm-hmm. going up there.
I thought that was Sean Spicer in the weeds.
No.
Spicer.
Well, and Nunes is also the one who's now up for, you know, now they're saying he was talking to the Ukrainian.
Yeah,
he was
going
there.
Not only is he sitting on the investigative committee that is looking at this, he was participating in the entire plot.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yes. Unbelievable.
Yes.
All of this, no one
said he's a good guy.
Right. Yeah, that's
well,
the whole thing. Saying he's effective is not the same as saying what a great man. Not at all.
Well,
it is maddening that he is effective as he is.
Well, let's remember that Hitler was effective.
Yeah,
that's exactly
what we should be remembering, Alan.
That's what scares us.
Yeah. Okay, we've also heard from Neil, who is addressing the panel. Senator Lindsey Graham says he will launch an official investigation into Hunter Biden. Do not recall any congressional investigation into a private citizen's business activities in a foreign country when his activity does not affect U.S. security. Is this unprecedented, and does it portend future show trials of political opponents if the Mad King is reelected? And that's from Neil.
Well, we should all be worried about it.
Good point, Neil.
Well, yes and no. The yes part is it should be, and that while the Trump kids are continuing to get away with, you know,
murder.
Political murder, that Hunter Biden keeps becoming being brought up. But as Rosemary has said, and I have agreed, Joe Biden had no business knowing he was going to run for president and letting that kid take that job in the Ukraine.
It was a risk that he took, and he's paying the cost for it now.
He knew he was going to run.
He always wanted to be president.
Also, the kid isn't a kid.
But I think if there had been a strong candidate this time, it's really a question as well.
The kid is not a kid.
He's 47.
He's not.
Yeah. So are you guys making the argument? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying, when's the last time you tried to tell one of your kids what to do at this point? But do they do it? Exactly.
He's an adult. He makes his own decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, you know,
what
is
$40,000.
One at a time now, folks. Listen to me.
What is the harm if they just do the investigation? I believe it's going to end up just like this current investigation of the origins of the Mueller investigation. The guy came back and said there were some mistakes. They were corrected. No big harm overall. They did the right thing.
Big harm.
So if Hunter Biden comes and does it,
harm is Hillary's email. Harm is it will dominate the news cycle.
Absolutely.
Trump and his crowd they'll run against Hunter Biden if Dad wins the nomination.
I don't think Biden's even going to be the candidate. Well, there's that possibility.
We're getting to that. Mikey Bloomberg's in.
Let us also mention that Bloomberg has invested at least $30 million in airtime. Nobody's going to be able to buy any other airtime because all you're going to be seeing is Bloomberg.
But that's just now.
Yes.
That's just to introduce him to the electorate.
Yeah.
He's going to be he will push the amount of money spent into the billions in all of this.
You know when you get in a cab and it costs $5 or whatever?
Yeah.
That's what $30 million is.
Yeah. I mean, so he's going to spend a tremendous amount of money. I wouldn't be surprised if he spent at least $1 billion of his own money on this.
Right.
And as I said on Facebook last night, and I got some pushback on it, from a professional point of view, I produced ads, not as good as that one, but I do this work. It was an excellent ad. It pushed the emotional buttons. It pushed the values buttons. It made him look like a decent human being. And
which
I do think he is. And I think that it was very, very effective and is now introducing a new player into this whole thing and could definitely skew.
I tell you what, we'll do, what does NPR say? We'll drill down, we'll deep dive,
some jive like that.
Tell you what, we'll do all that into the Bloomberg announcement coming up here. But let's take a brief break. Rosemary Armeo is here, Libby Post is here, Sarah Rogerson, Alan Shartok, and Jim. It's the roundtable panel, and we'll be right back. Oh, that's Annie and the Hedonists, right? They'll be at the Cafe Lena in Saratoga on 1129 and at Siga Hotel in Cooperstown 1130. Their new album is Bring It On Home. We're hearing a little of that today on the Roundtable. It's the Roundtable panel, and Libby Post, Jim Hendler, Sarah Rogers, and Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok make up the panel today. We have a few more letters, and then we'll relaunch the Michael Bloomberg topic.
Yes, that's good.
Thank you.
All right. And John says, Chinese vision. Rosemary, a few moments ago, you said China had a different vision of the world than the U.S. Can you explain what you mean by that a bit more? I feel like what has been mentioned so far are things the left has been pushing for America to do for a long time, using our money to build infrastructure, improve developing economies instead of buying weapons and waging wars. And that's from John.
The Chinese have put out the idea that democracy is not the best system in the world. They have a state-run system with plans. It's heavily built around infrastructure. Of course, the infrastructure they're building all benefits trade into and out of China. They're reconstructing the Silk Road with their, Belts and Roads Project. And so in countries in Central and Eastern Europe and Africa, you can get very low interest loans. Well, they're scary loans. People, journalists are beginning to look at this. They'll build monster expressways and bridges for you, and you put up as collateral your ports and your mines.
Maybe the town.
And then if you can't afford it, China ends up owning it.
Maybe the town of Great Barrington should go to
to get the roads fixed.
To the Chinese, because our bridges are all falling one after another.
Yeah, yeah. And
well,
you know,
and you don't have to worry about environmental.
There we go. They don't care about environment or human rights or treatment of workers or labor or all the things that the TPA of Barack Obama was criticized for here by getting rid of it with no alternative, no alternate vision or help from the U.S. as we withdraw. China is standing there as the go-to country now.
Okay,
it's a frightening thing.
Proceeding on now.
Sorry.
Anna says China.
I gave a lecture.
No, not at all. I admire you. Anna says China / Russia. China and Russia, which are both governed by dictatorships, can make a long-range plan for world domination. Our elected government, hampered by the shortness of elected terms, makes short-range plans or no plans at all. Is this the price we pay for democracy? And that is from Anna. Well, you know, Anna, that's an interesting question, especially with a man who's sitting in the White House right now. The question is, why does he admire these dictators the way that he does? I'm not saying that it's the same thing, but it is pretty clear to me that if he had his way, we would be heading in the same direction that these guys are.
Yeah, so I want to push back on the idea that we make short-term plans as Americans, too. I mean, we'll get to it, I think, eventually, but we're talking about major normative shifts in the military that have developed over decades and decades and
What do you mean normative shifts?
Moves away from the idea of the rule of law, international rule of law, the war, the law of warfare, basic human decency and dignity, and it's actually kind of terrifying to hear letters like that, where we're seeing sort of the erosion, where we all of a sudden have been tricked as Americans into thinking there is no baseline.
You know, Sarah, you're absolutely right, and nothing could exemplify that more, I think, than what has happened today with the firing of the Navy Secretary.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Who, if you've been in China or some other place and don't know what happened, you know, a guy was acquitted of killing, you know, a militant, but he was convicted of how would you say it, of
celebrating it
with the corpse,
of standing next to the corpse, and
if it was a hunting trophy. Yeah,
right. And he got disciplined for that, and the president of the United States has stepped in and virtually fired the Navy Secretary for following, as you say, the normative rules.
May I ask for some clarification from the panel on this? Because believe me, I really want to be against Trump and pro Spencer, but I've read this case and I don't get it. He's protesting lack of discipline, the loss of discipline in the military. In other words, Trump intervening, but he bystepped the chain of command, which is the exact same offense.
Well,
and then
the
deal, wait a minute, the deal that he made, that he was offering to Trump, was horrific. It was like, we'll have a sham investigation. Mm. I'll still be in charge, but you'll get the result you want. This is not a man I wish to champion. I'm almost on Esper's side.
No, I'd rather back the Rear Admiral in this case, who's actually in charge of the Navy, who's the one who has threatened to resign over this whole thing.
Not Spencer.
Yeah, not the sacrificial.
Not the secretary.
I think the secretary is sort of like a sacrificial lamb. We'll see how this plays out this week. But
you know, this is actually this plays into the whole thing we saw with the Kurds, with other things. So one of the pillars of American military, I don't want to say might, this is our military strategies overseas. You hear often about us offering military assistance to people. Very often, a big chunk of that is coming through these special forces. Now, again, you can get into the whole good or bad about military, but their trustworthiness has been absolutely crucial. And there is no part of the military that has been more I mean, if you think the Marines are strict, you should see the Rangers, the SEALs, the Air Force elite. And these guys train like crazy, but they train to a rule of law. And when the president overrules that, the people who are their commanders are really worried, not just about their own troops and their own morale, but about the fact that now suddenly, how is a foreign country going to trust us?
Jim Handler, we are so lucky to have you on our panel. Just remind everybody where you teach, because I think in this case it's so important that everybody
Well, I'm a professor up at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute.
Yes.
And do some other things. But I've also done a lot of consulting for our government, for a number of organizations in our government for many years.
And you teach this stuff, right?
I mostly teach the technology, but I do an occasional policy class.
We have heard from Jim. Open door electronic media policy. question mark. Since our glorious leader seems to think it's okay for politicians to get help from foreign countries in our elections, how do we think our glorious leader is going to feel when China seeks revenge dirt of Trump for the trade war and or Iran seeks revenge on Trump for tearing up the nuclear deal and implementing extreme sanctions both countries have a grudge to settle and the technology depth to achieve a significant impact? The only thing I'd like to say is no matter what happens, no matter how bad it is, that Republican majority to a person stands solidly behind this president. So what do you mean? You mean if Iran says something about or if Russia says something about jumping around on a bed somewhere in Moscow or something like that, that's going to make a difference? I don't think so. It hasn't up to now.
No.
I agree. And I think that the so the strategy the Russians had, the strategy we're seeing in some of the Chinese and some other countries, in fact, they just want to sow dissension, right? They're happiest if we have a split government that can't move or that's fighting among itself. This impeachment must be music to Putin's ears.
Well, look at the Uyghurs.
Because right? It means we can't do anything while they're doing that. The Uyghurs is a great example.
Yeah, look at the Uyghurs. And NPR did a very good job this morning on that. You know, they don't care. I mean, that's what the difference between a dictatorship is and a Republican democracy. I always say Republican democracy because as soon as I say democracy with a small d, somebody calls up and reminds me that we're a republic. Jonathan says, Nunes, be sure to discuss the Nunes-Ukraine connection. Done and done, right? We did it.
Yes.
Yep. All right. Tamara says, why not a slam dunk? So with all the evidence presented during the hearings, including the bombshell from Sunderland that there was, in capital letters, a quid pro quo, and everyone in capital letters knew about it, why is so much of the public ambivalent about the impeachment conviction? I just told you, this is all about power. This is all about power. This is all about wealth. This is all about keeping the others out.
Forget the public. How about the committee itself? When heard from Texas, a man who's not running for re-election, so doesn't have any direct fear of Trump, says, I haven't heard nothing here that shows me the president has committed bribery. And he sat and listened to all of the closed and open testimony. I just see this effort for impeachment as doomed.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that Tamara's letter, I think that Tamara's letter is reflective of what a lot of people who are disgusted with Trump are thinking. Well, the evidence is clear. Why don't they just throw him out? Why don't they just do that? Because it isn't about that.
Yeah.
It isn't about these issues. It's about privilege. It's about maintaining a majority in this country. That's what it is. And that's why no one is moving off the dime.
Well, and I wouldn't look at polls necessarily. I would say that there is evidence that people are moving off the dime when you look at the congressional race in the North Country, when you see Tedra Cobb raise $1 million over a weekend.
Sure. Right.
Because of Elise Stefanik's missteps in handling the impeachment questions.
Right.
That's a big deal. And I saw $500,000 raised by the Stefanik camp, but it'll be that's insane amounts of money.
And money coming to Nunes' opponents, even though it doesn't.
And money coming to a lot of the Democratic challengers. And I think we'll see, yes, what's happening. The Republicans are maintaining lockstep, but many of them aren't running again. And that
people might not understand what you just said, Libby, which is when you said money coming to the Democratic challengers, it sounds like that could be people who are challenging the Democrats. You're meaning?
Oh, no, the Democratic challengers are for Republican seats, like Tedra Cobb. You know, they're going after Delgado and money.
With a huge ad that keeps playing.
Yes, really ridiculous ads. But anyway, the fact of the matter is that, yes, the Republicans are going to maintain lockstep, even though some of them aren't going to run. But there's going to be, I think, there's going to be a continuation of the blue wave that we saw in 2018. We saw it in 2019 on a local level. And we're going to continue to see that. And that I think people are watching these hearings, recognizing the people who think anyway, recognizing that something, you know, is incredibly wrong with how this president is operating and what he's doing and how he's destroying all the institutions of democracy.
It's all about the purples, I tell you.
Yes,
it's all about the purples.
And which are suburban women.
Michigan, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and Pennsylvania
right.
are the three states that
That's
matter.
Right.
And what matters is the urban turnout. And what matters is the suburban women.
All right, one more letter here, Alan, then we'll have to take a break for news.
That's all we have.
Okay.
And we heard from Larry in Woodstock, who says the United States doesn't exist anymore. The great American experiment is over. The name and entity will live on like Kodak, but the U.S. has jumped the shark.
That is overstating
gosh.
It.
Wow, that's worse than me.
That's what I was going to say, but I'm glad you said it.
I have promised not to talk about my spouse on the air, but let me say I believe they would agree with that.
Admittedly, without much knowledge of history, I used to wonder how great empires of the world lost their status. Well, here we have it, Larry and Woodstock.
We still have the Constitution. And tell me that those hearings that we heard the last 2 weeks would be happening in China or Russia.
Okay.
And all those witnesses would be dead.
Yeah. Right?
Yes.
Well, but there's another way of looking at it, Mr. Raymond.
Well, you have 12 seconds to give
there's another way of looking at it.
Nine.
And that is whatever they were doing doesn't affect the way our Constitution is being destroyed from within in this country.
Let's take a break here. Alan is here, of course. Jim Hendler is here. Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson, Rosemary Armeo. You can join the fun by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org is the email address. We'll take a break for news. We'll be back. Oh, hello again. Welcome back to the roundtable. It's Monday morning, 10:06, and everybody is getting back into position here after the news. And by the way, you know, Sarah LaDuc, our producer, is a lovely human being.
She is.
Here.
But do not cross her. And so she came in and said, please remind people about the proofreading of the emails. I have disqualified several because they were incomprehensible. So when Sarah LaDuc speaks in a very soft voice, you'd be wise to listen, proofread your emails.
And that's not the only crisis around here.
What happened?
The light in the men's room has gone out.
Oh, my God.
That really is
bad.
So you can only imagine what the consequences might be.
That's right.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Appreciate it very much. It's the roundtable panel.
Well, look, all mothers with boys understand this problem.
We aim to please. You aim too, please.
I was going to do it.
Thank you.
I said, I'm not going to use that line.
You were going to aim, Alan? Is that what you were
going
to do?
No, I was going to use that line among many
I've
others.
Never met any of these people before in my life.
Oh, hey, by the way, Jim Hendler's here from RPI. Political consultant, lobbyist Libby Poe, Sarah Rogerson from Albany Law, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, and the chap who is discussing the lights out in the men's room is Alan Shartok. It's the roundtable panel.
Well, when you're the president of the company,
right.
crises like these become your problem.
Right.
For example, there is in the men's room, you wash your hands and you use a paper towel, throw the paper towel in the thing, right? The problem is that unless you're the president, nobody bothers to take the paper towels which fall all around the blue thing and put it there and then put their foot in it and force it all down.
That's what I'm talking about, normative decline.
Exactly. There's been normative decline.
There's a baseline
that
is not being, you know what, in the women's bathroom, I have to tell you.
Yes.
Not a problem.
If you're listening, get well soon.
You mean somebody, a woman will take care of that on
Always.
Their own.
As if instinctively.
Yes.
I do it. Isn't that interesting?
Well, it's really not all that interesting. Let's take a break for some emails.
Break for some emails.
Believe me, next break, I'm running down the street. Trust me. No, let's break from this interesting Algonquin roundtable type discussion to some of the letters that we have that have been proofread
properly.
We get
more letters about this than anything. Paul says the American public will have forgotten all this by September. Some other issue will dominate the news cycle. A month is an eternity in America. Your thoughts, Paul?
Jim Hendler's nodding.
Well, you know, it was a month from the famous so-called pussy tape to the election, and when Trump went down and back up.
Right.
And, you know, the email thing a week before just completely changed things.
Right.
And
Keith says Trump's mystery hospital visit. Panel, Why isn't it a larger story that Trump made an unannounced, mysterious hospital visit to Walter Reed Medical Center on Saturday evening?
Well, Rosemary tried to do that.
We did talk about it.
And I believe I was shut down because it was speculation. And,
no.
But I maintain that the health of a president is a national concern that we should pay attention to. And he has so little credibility that when he says, I had some spare time, so at 9 o'clock at night, I went in for the first part of my, the first phase, he called it of my physical, nothing unusual. That does not ring true.
The only part
a
of
BS
what you said
meter
could
should
be true, though, right? Right.
No, because the spokeswoman also for the White House also misspoke about the presence of a Marine or the lack of presence of a Marine at the White House at the residence. So.
And I believe that when he had his first medical, made widespread, and it turned out that it wasn't all completely right. So there you are. Your point is well taken. Panel, why isn't it a larger story? Oh, we did that.
Yes.
He's the president of the United States, and the media isn't making a bigger deal out of the story about his health. Bad media.
Rosemary is with you on that.
I totally agree with you, and we are watching it. I have delved deeply into speculation. Was it, for example, an anxiety attack, which would explain indications he had heart, chest pains, but he was sent back to the White House, which he would not have been had it been even a mild heart mm-hmm. attack, but an anxiety
attack. Imagine it. You know what I mean?
Could have been.
Yeah, bad Big Mac got him. You know, he's all right.
Well, yeah. they...
Well, the Fox News interview...
But he's very good, because like when he wobbled during the Medal of Arts thing, he claimed he was just dancing to the music and not falling over.
Yeah, I think there's some problems. But, I mean, he is a 70-something-year-old man, 72, and so he is compensating for it. I don't say, I'm not claiming, you know, that Melania is really running the White House the way that
Woodrow Wilson's
wiped it. I don't think it's anything like that. But Reagan. I do not think that the American people are getting the full report on his health.
Okay, and we heard from James, who said, hello, panel. We'll never have true equity in this nation until the rich are punished to the same extent as the poor. Imagine the scenario where a poor person who makes $25,000 a year is ticketed for a minor violation, has to pay a fine of $250. That's 1% of everything that the person makes that year. To a person who makes the $1 million a year for more or more, this fine means nothing to them. We need to fine people a percentage of their income, not mandatory dollar amounts. Thank you from James.
So just an interesting anecdote on that one. I was in Finland and met the person who at that point in time had the world's record traffic fine. Because in Finland, your penalty is a percentage of income.
Wow.
And this was the vice president for research of Nokia, who had been speeding at, 150 kilometers in a 70 zone or something.
Wow.
And the ticket was the equivalent of about $80,000.
Wow.
Wow.
A little draconian.
But on the other hand.
So there are countries that do believe in what this person said.
Yeah, but on the other hand, what does that amount of money mean to that individual? Probably the same thing, $5.
Well, that was
else,
their
right?
point, yeah. exactly.
Thank you. Trump and military justice. Trump's positions are. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. I was just saying he wasn't happy about it.
Oh, well, the Nokia fella. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Peter says Trump and military justice, Trump's positions are usually arrived at to give him a political advantage. I don't understand how his pardoning military men accomplishes this. I get why he's doubled down, but I don't understand why he got involved in the first place. Am I missing Peter in New Paltz? You're missing a lot, Peter.
I think he's probably not listening to a lot of conservative media outlets, which have made this case in particular and the person at the center of it a bit of a media darling.
Yes, and let's remember—
The Gallagher are you talking about?
Gallagher.
Yeah, he's mm-hmm.
Let's remember that, he has everybody, we say around here 10 times a week, he's playing to the base. He sees that group of military as part of the base and saying, what if I do something wrong? Are they going to hold me responsible? And Trump is saying, don't worry. Whatever you do, it's okay. That's what he's saying. All right. And that's from Peter. All right. And then Justin says, Bloomberg, if people will accept $1 billion paid to corporate media to get the same old out of Bloomberg, that will be a sad state of affairs. Hopefully, with all that cash, Bloomberg at least has a plan for everything. Bloomberg is currently 77 years old. While that shouldn't matter, those who disqualify others on their age should take this into consideration with Bloomberg, too.
You think there should be a max age for a presidential run?
Or president of WAMC?
I did not say.
All right, yeah. Well, no, I thought you might be saying that.
You were saying that.
I did. Marilyn says, Roundtable, please stop nitpicking the Democratic field. Any of the existing candidates head and shoulders above this current occupant of the White House. 45 is a clear and present danger to the U.S. He and the GOP are using Russian propaganda to mount a defense for his criminal acts. The people that continue to support 45 and the GOP are exhibiting cult behavior and won't be moved. Accurate, relentless media reporting is what we need, not both sides, both sideism. Please stop equivocating on minor policy differences with the Democratic Party and understand the threat that this man and his cult following poses to democracy, and stop discussing any of this like it is normal.
But isn't that what the primary process is all about? You discuss the differences between the candidates who are running, and then they eventually pick the candidate that will run, right?
I understand the frustration behind the comment, because I'm not going to say I haven't thought about that myself.
It's frustration.
Yeah, it is frustration, and it's a frustration where we have an unprecedented, I think, number of primary candidates at this point for an extended period of time. I all of you would know better than me, but I can't remember a time when we had this many people left in November.
How many Republicans were left at this time in the last cycle? Because there were a lot of those.
There were a lot of Republicans.
I think they were all pretty much all still around.
It was about 16. I mean, it was a similar. A year. It was
17 to begin with, but yeah, I don't know how many there were at this time.
DeWitt.
I love the idea, though, that if you don't talk about or report on the nitpicking, it's called, the differences, that this somehow makes a difference. Like, people won't know. It's an argument for not being educated, and that's a Republican argument. Please be careful of that.
I don't think it's an argument for not being educated. I think it's an argument for not tearing down the Democrats in a time when it is so vitally important to elect one as president.
So the message here, Libby, is everybody should shut up and not criticize any of the Democratic candidates. Right?
No, I don't think that that's the case, because I don't think that that's ever going to happen. But I think we need to be. I think what this person's trying to say is that we need to be careful about how much we go after and how much we destroy individual Democratic candidates, because it's going to impact November.
And, Libby, that applies to the Democratic candidates themselves, not only
on
to
each
a bunch
other.
Of people
Absolutely.
Like us.
I mean, we are really good at being a circular firing squad. And they've got to stop attacking one another and keep the focus on Trump.
Which brings us to Tulsi Gabbard.
Right, right.
You keep saying we. I don't include myself in a we. I mean, I voted for the present Republican governor of Massachusetts, and I'm a registered,
independent.
Well, we don't call them independents. We call them unenrolled in Massachusetts.
Oh, that's because there's no independence party.
No, because there is.
There is?
And I think so, but
okay.
I may be wrong about
But you're
that.
Unenrolled.
But it allows me
NOP.
To vote in either primary.
Right. You
know. Yeah.
So, and I've been thinking about voting in the Republican primary in Massachusetts this year for our former governor, Weld.
Do you think he'll still be there by then?
I do.
So,
I do.
I stand corrected. There were 8 participants in the November 2015 Republican primary
That's
debate.
That's still a lot.
By this time?
Yeah, and actually they had secondary debates too. So there were 4 additional debaters.
So 12 in the field.
Yeah. Well, there were more in the field that just didn't make it to the debate. So they had 15.
Right. Okay, so a similar number.
Yeah.
So. And, you know, you talk about you shouldn't, as Democrats, nitpick each other, whatever, but... Boy, I'll tell you what, there was a lot of tearing down done in the last Republican cycle. And,
oh, boy, was there ever. And those words are coming back at them now for the things they said now that they're supporting Trump.
But I do think, where I do think she has a point, Marilyn has a point, is that some of the arguments that are getting picked up as arguments need to be phrased correctly. So, for example, everyone on that stage had a better health care plan than Trump. But... Right. They're arguing over the details, right?
Well, I don't know that you're right, Jim. I don't know that you're right. Trump told us all
that he
had a secret plan that he was going to do. We haven't seen it yet, nor will we see it. But there it is.
No,
okay.
His secret plan is putting out health insurance plans that seem cheap and then don't cover.
Yeah. DeWitt says Biden. So let me guess, you're supporting Biden even after he secured a shady, cushy $83,000 per month job for his loser kid. What's going to happen after he get elected? He might just find you a job, too. I don't know who this was to.
Goodness.
I was a pro-Biden person in the beginning. I certainly have my deep questions now. And I think it's fair to say that both Rosemary and I have brought up again and again the fact that this kid had no business taking
Who's not a kid? Who's 47?
Well, he's the kid of somebody.
Yes. I would be in favor of laws that limit the overseas business potential of the next of kin of high officials. That would include the Trump children as well.
I was going to say, I mean, all these people are complaining about Biden.
Look what his kids are.
In fact, the kids, Donnie Trump Jr. talking about Hunter Biden's problems really just strikes me as
that's what they do.
Yes. Well, as a feminist, which you are, think about the implications. Does that mean that somebody's wife or husband can't take a job? Yes, it does.
I don't know about that.
I mean, you know, just look at Kellyanne Conway and George.
Well, they're not working for foreign companies. This would be like Hunter or the Trump kids who are engaging with enemy regimes in some cases.
Right. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. Rosemary Armeo's here, Jim Hendler, Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson, and Alan Shartok. Billionaire and former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, one of the world's richest men, has formally launched a Democratic bid for president, ending weeks of speculation. The 77-year-old former Republican announced his candidacy Sunday in a written statement posted on a campaign website, describing himself as uniquely positioned to defeat President Trump. He will quickly follow with a huge advertising campaign that will blanket the airwaves in key primary states. That's the first part of the story. Let's do that before we get into Bloomberg News. We excited about this? Hey, Libby, you might be a Democrat. You excited about this?
I wouldn't say excited. I would say that, as I said before, I think he's going to bring new energy to the campaign. He's certainly bringing new money, or his money, to the campaign. The ad was very well done. This does not mean, folks, that I am supporting Michael Bloomberg, but as a professional, I can say the ad was well done.
I have not seen the ad. What does the ad say?
The ad talks about him. That's the difference between the Steyer ads and the Bloomberg ads are really stark, because the Steyer ads just have Tom talking to the audience. Bloomberg, you've got a narrator talking about him, what he's done, what his values are.
Show him as a picture of a little kid.
Yeah, the kid, and then growing up, and that, you know, he wants health care for everyone, tax the rich. They say this. The rich and make the middle class pay less taxes. Health care for all, you know, government, or you can keep your own. I mean, he's hitting all the right spots and all the right messaging. And I thought it was a very, very well done ad. The music was good. I mean, it all worked together.
Sarah Rogerson.
Because he knows he has an uphill battle. He's going to sing the song that catches the left's ear for now. He has to. Because what he's doing is not playing by the rules.
What do you mean?
He's skipping the Iowa and New Hampshire primaries. He's deciding to jump in and target those larger states, as you mentioned. He's not doing the work. What doors is he knocking on?
But if you win, what difference does it make, right?
If you win, what difference does it make? It means that whole process that we're talking about weeding down candidates, isn't happening in a real and authentic way, because he's short-circuiting the process in order to win.
Okay, but wait a second. Let's just get your perspective and try to understand where you're coming from. Do you have a candidate in this election?
I have a top three.
They are? Well, Elizabeth, Bernie, and?
Booker.
Okay. So those people aren't catching a lot of backing, right?
Elizabeth is.
Well, I think Elizabeth maxed out.
She's doing very, very well. And Cory Booker was the only person who was pulling ahead of Trump last week.
I think Elizabeth maxed out. I may be wrong. She's my senator. I love her. So I think everybody has a right to run. Everybody has a right to do it their own way. Look at Steyer. Now, Steyer has put a fortune into ads about himself and the rest of it. It hasn't worked. Already, I think I'm right about this. I saw a poll which said that 20% of the people of polled were supporting Bloomberg. Now, 20% is not enough to win, but it's a lot better than 3%.
But that's name recognition. So, people know his name because he owns everything.
Yeah, so, but that's the way this works.
I'm curious about something from you New York types. So I wasn't here for most of the time Bloomberg was mayor of New York.
I was.
How was he as a mayor?
Well, it depends who you are. If you live in New York right now and you look around, it's a different city since he's been there. There are spires all over the place. There are buildings that the airplanes will have to watch out for.
That's not him. He didn't do that.
No, he did allow for building. You're right. You're wrong and you're right. You're right that it was not him who's doing the present round, but it is him who set the whole thing up so you could do it. And I think that's what's important.
You know what else is happening? As a result of Bloomberg policies, we're adding 500 police officers to the subway system to arrest ladies selling churros from carts. We're talking about
or people who jump over the
turnstile jumping. You want to talk about
people who get pushed in front of subways, right? That's also a thing.
That is not the thing that they're targeting. So what we're talking about is...
My cousin was. He was pushed over.
Was he?
Yeah.
Reifying systemic inequality from a white male who enjoys a whole lot of privilege and is just asking the American public to turn a blind eye to stop and frisk policing. When that's, by the way, think a couple of years back, one of the number one issues in America.
By the way, that's a powerful argument against Bloomberg. It's a powerful argument against Bloomberg, just another, quote, billionaire. Nevertheless, there are a lot of Americans who respect wealth. They do.
Well, it's not just another billionaire. He was in a position of power to affect change in one of the most progressive cities in America, and he chose regressive policing.
Okay, so I want to take another point of view. I am a proud never-Trumper. I do not have any candidate, except I don't like Tulsi Gabbard, but anybody else I would vote for. And I like that Bloomberg is in the race. I wish he had been in from the beginning.
What?
Hillary Clinton went through the whole process, the whole schlag that you're talking about, and it got her nowhere.
Okay, but he came
in. I worry about whether that does any good at all. If he can bypass it, use his money to do it, more power to him. I think he has impressive records in leadership and environment, in grassroots voting. And yes, there was repressive voting, for which he has rightly apologized. But at the time, there were serious, very different criminal problems than we have now. For the same reason that Biden is in trouble for the crime bill, so is Bloomberg now forced to apologize. But they could make an argument if we were a more sane society that at the time it made sense.
But it's a very good argument between you and Sarah. Because I think Sarah probably responds to more of our audience than you are. Let's face it. One of the reasons that the president is being impeached right now is because the rank and file insisted on it, despite the fact that the speaker, the powerful speaker, didn't want it happening. And those are the people, Rosemary, who are willing to say, you know, not another billionaire. We don't need another billionaire.
You know, it's funny. Bloomberg, to some extent, has stolen the thunder of Deval Patrick, who also announced last week. And it's basically been somewhat crickets since that has happened.
Yes.
Has this announcement from Bloomberg basically said goodbye to Deval Patrick's
run? It didn't help him. Let me say this to you. He's a friend of mine. He's a guy I have tremendous respect for. And I think if he had the same $30 million to spend on these ads.
Or if he were white?
Well, it could be. I think the one thing I've said again and again that you have all poo-pooed is that if the president of the United States, former president Barack Obama, came out and said, this is the guy, he'd be right in it. I don't think he's going to say it. I don't think he's going to use his prestige to do that. But I don't think, personally, knowing Deval the way that I do, notice my use of the first name, if he would have gotten into this without talking to Obama first. Don't believe it.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. I tell you, the panel has done a really nice job of sort of waiting for others to finish before they start speaking. And then there are these pauses, and it's damn refreshing. Once again, if you want to email us, it's panel@wamc.org. We only have about 30 seconds here before the next news break.
But let's remember that we're going to be going until Joe gets back, probably, or until the president.
What do you mean going?
We are going to 11 o'clock every day.
So today is the first day of the expanded roundtable.
Yes, and we've been getting a lot of mail saying we should do a little bit more.
Okay.
And so this is the little bit more. On the other hand, that last hour remains a very important time because that's when people with community issues and the wonderful book stuff that Joe does will be carried on.
All right. And let's take a brief break here. We have Alan Chartok on the panel, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, tetherless world professor of computer web and cognitive sciences at RPI, Jim Hendler, political consultant and lobbyist Libby Post, and Albany Law professor Sarah Rogerson. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the roundtable. It's 10:34 on a Monday morning, and that's Annie and the Hedonist. They will be at Cafe Alina on the 29th. And the Otsega Hotel in Cooperstown on the 30th. That's from their new record, Bring It On Home. This is the Roundtable, generally not a music program.
Two things. We used to have a program on WMC with the Traum Brothers called Bring It On Home.
Right.
It's a good, great show.
Stipulated.
Secondly, Cafe Lena, where my band, the Berkshire Ramblers, appeared to support the institution on Friday night. That's a great place to go. I mean, the seating is wonderful. They spent $2 million reconditioning it.
We went a couple of weeks ago. It's really lovely.
It's really terrific. Yeah. And there's an elevator now.
Yeah.
An elevator.
It's on the second floor?
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah. Well, you should have known.
Because
you're
folk.
An expert in things.
I don't do
the folks. It's not only folk. They got a lot of jazz.
Oh, do they?
A lot of good things.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Right, fair enough. Well, is this the way the expanded roundtable is going to run?
I just thought I'd mention it.
Panel at WAMC.org is the email address. Now, if you're just tuning in, New Adventures in Radio, we have expanded the panel until 10:50, owing to all the things that are happening out there in the world. And then we also want to hear people weigh in with their reckons, and we have more letters.
250 pounds.
Right. Oh, really?
Weigh in.
Oh, really?
No, I'm 125 now. I've gained 5 pounds.
Good for you.
All right. Jonathan says, American experiment. The letter writer, so dismissed by some panelists, was correct. The American experiment is over. Congress has shown itself to be powerless. The courts are now merely a political arm of the president. The executive branch is that of an autocracy. We're done. Over and out. And that's Jonathan in Valley Forge. In Valley Falls.
Okay.
Yes, but there's something to be said about that letter. When you say that the Congress has shown itself to be powerless, I don't think that's true. I think, you know, Mr. Schiff and the Democrats and Nancy Pelosi have been extraordinary during this time in pointing it all out. So I think there's such a thing as overspeak. Anyway, thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Jonathan.
And then Mark says, 2020 election. Trump will be impeached and then acquitted. Give us the new news. The Democrats need, and by the way, Democrats in this case takes a capital D.
Okay. Oh, the sounds the same though, right? When you read it.
Well, no. There's a big difference between because he.
You understood.
This is
though.
Written up, but. Yes, I understood. But if you use the capital, do you know which Democrats you're talking about?
Okay.
Because
okay.
The rest of us, including me, who voted for a Republican governor,
yes.
Might be also somebody in favor of democracy. Therefore, Democrats with a small D. Get it?
14 okay. minutes to go.
Grammar lessons. This is good. This is good that we're going to have time for grammar now.
The Democrats.
I'm going to take a passive voice tomorrow.
I was going to bring up plutocracy.
The Democrats need to rally around the facts from the impeachment as well as health care and gun control. Don't be feeble on this topic. Use it in all campaign, congressional, Senate, and presidential, and work. And these are capitalized very hard to get voters to the polls. The key is to unite, and that's from Mark.
Speaking of health care and gun control, guess who was early and out on those issues as well? Deval Patrick. 2010, he was out pushing for tighter gun control. And in 2014, signed a law requiring health insurers to extend coverage to people struggling with drug addiction to battle the opioid epidemic. So just pointing out that we have two very different candidates announced in the same week, one with a proven track record for all the issues that small D Democrats care about, yeah. and the other with a lot of money.
I'd like you all, if you would give me
so
if you would give me an hour of your time, I would love it. If you could just go to WAMC.org and write in the subject line, Deval Patrick, Alan Chartok, and you will hear an hour-long interview at the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield. Not only Deval Patrick, but his wonderful wife, Diane, and you will hear a story. If you are parked in the driveway, you will not leave for an hour.
This
simple.
Is sounding like endorsements for Deval Patrick this morning.
Not at all. Who, me?
Yeah, he doesn't need $30 million for ads. He just has us.
15 seconds of airtime is hardly an endorsement when we spent 5 minutes talking about the merits of Bloomberg.
To say nothing of you-know-who. Okay, capital T. Martina says, Bloomberg. I agree with Rosemary about Bloomberg. He's an excellent leader. At times, some of his policies were wrong. But I liked living in New York City when he was mayor, and that's from Martina.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay. And from Mary Lou Yang.
Hello, Mary Lou.
Statler Brothers.
No.
It's extra 20 minutes.
People are not going to ask for that extra
20 minutes.
Ricky Nelson,
really, we're
right?
going down.
Is that Ricky Nelson?
Yeah. But then the Statler Brothers had a major right. hit with it. And I love the Statler Brothers.
9 minutes.
Wake up, guys. We do need sugar in here.
Mary Lou said Yang. Two interesting articles about Yang were on Sunday's Times Union. Interested in the panel's opinion about him.
Oh, it was interesting. Yeah, I noticed that both an op-ed piece and a front-page piece were talking about Yang. Yang has a very strong support from a very specific niche. And
meet my niche.
I won't go into a long story about this, but I've talked about this. I think there was an opportunity for the Democrats a while ago to have actually taken over this niche, and we blew it, which was there's a group of people who consider themselves more or less libertarian technology people.
No, that's absolutely right.
And it's almost like a 51st, 2nd, 57th, depending what you count as your states, but a new voting bloc. And the question someone asked me once is, you know, who would be their president, right? Who would be their candidate?
And
that was never
that.
Really. And Yang has actually started to move that bloc. Now, I don't think he's really got that whole bloc. I think there's a lot of people in that group who are very idealistic, but then there's another whole group who are very pragmatic.
Well, that's
saying,
the group
you
know as the Yings.
No, we don't hate him because he's a billionaire, but he's not white, so that's okay.
Right. Well, it's
no.
But again, this is
no. It's he, not. I'm the, not. The I'm not a fan of these. Right. These are the bros of Silicon Valley.
No. I'm saying. No. You're, I agree. I agree. But know, I'm saying. But the issues that he's running on are the issues of this technocrat group.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting.
It is
a very interesting space.
Yes.
And I think as time goes on, that group is going to be very important. Now, what may be interesting, and I was just saying this the other day, Bloomberg is one of the only people who could take that group from Yang.
Sarah, you want to say something?
I don't know about that. I mean, it's mostly men between the ages of 25 to 40. They listen to the Tim Ferriss podcast. They talk about how to renovate their lives around Seneca and these traditions of Stoicism. It's a very male-dominated, tech-focused, libertarian. I have a lot of privilege, so I can figure out how long I should meditate in the morning group.
The Peter Newman story from WeWork.
That was a great description.
Did you see the Peter Newman story from WeWork? He was like in on with Jared Kushner negotiations around the Middle East peace stuff, and he thought that there were only three people in the world who could solve the problems: the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Jared, and himself. And he is right
goodness.
Out of that tech mold, that's the WeWork guy. And his public offering tanked, and he's no longer the CEO. But that's the kind of mentality we're dealing
it's
with.
It's an instrumentalism that is very dangerous.
Ooh. By the way, I did not say I was in favor of
no.
Okay.
Said, very good. Certainly not.
You brought up a good point.
And here but comes another letter from Joan, who says, panel, we can express some concerns with Democrats, but words matter. How it is phrase can do a lot of damage to the Democrats. These Trump supporters easily jump for joy if, in capital letters, if it appears to them that some Dem on the panel is taking their bait to make Dems look just as bad as Trump, or to the praised the performance of traitors like Nunes. Let's get control first, then do all the criticizing all of the wants about the Dems. That's your point about read your...
Making sure that you have your all your letters, and I think
and
they lost a Y.
Jones.
Well, you know, we've been talking about Bloomberg to some extent, and I'm sure that those on the panel have seen this. Michael Bloomberg now running the news service that bears his name said Sunday it will not investigate him or any of his Democratic rivals, and Bloomberg Opinion will no longer run unsigned editorials. A Bloomberg editor-in-chief, John Micklethwaite, announced the new rules in a note to his news organization's 2,700 journalists and analysts on Sunday, shortly after former New York City mayor announced his candidacy.
Do you think he had a conversation with the candidate before he made that announcement?
I don't know, but it stinks, right?
What stinks?
Saying that the organization won't investigate or do anything to look into Bloomberg just because Bloomberg owns the organization?
There's two forms of privilege going on here, too. You have the protection that that affords, maybe. And then you also have another headline with Bloomberg's name in it.
Mm-hmm.
Where at this stage of the game, I guess no news is bad news. No press is bad press. So, you know, again, yeah.
Well,
I'll
can
just
we take it you don't your name really right. care for Bloomberg's candidacy?
I don't.
Is that a subtext here this morning?
Well, it is. I mean, I have great respect for Sarah. Great respect.
But
here we go. Here comes the shoe.
I can tell.
I just think we ought to, you know, decide who stands for what around here. That's all.
Rosemary Armeo, investigative journalist. What did you make of that?
If I were a political reporter for Bloomberg, I'd quit immediately. That's abdication of their job, which is to investigate the candidates, including their own guy. You do it with transparency. So I applaud the part about, yeah, sign the editorials. You know, if the boss wants to go after you for it, fine. But to say, no, we're not going to investigate anybody. And then there's something else about, well, we'll pick up articles done by other reputable press organizations. That's all so subjective, and it's awful.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this.
Well, take it to the next level. Let's just say that Bloomberg gets the nomination. Then what does Bloomberg News do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, then are they going to not cover any of the presidential candidates, either of the presidential candidates? And if you should win, I'm sorry, Sarah, close your ears to this. If you should win, I would hope you would divest and get away from it, and then they can go back to being a news organization.
That's actually what I was thinking, Rosemary. Yeah, you must have read my mind.
They absolutely ought to, and that's what Trump should be doing, too. Yeah. All presidents.
Well, theoretically, didn't he do that once?
Constitution is clear on that.
I mean, he did walk away, right, from Bloomberg, but he came back.
Right.
And he wasn't going to run it, and then he did run it.
He ousted the guy who had been there in his stead, yeah, which was his right.
I mean, if you know you're going to come back, are you really walking away? You're just not taking calls for a while.
Well, you know, after Trump, that'd be good. Just don't spend my money
advice.
Fixing your properties, flying my kids all around to do deals, and then put them in the White House to use that as their office. It's just
he'll certainly make more than $30 million selling off this company if that's what he has to quote unquote.
Well,
do.
You don't think that's what he's worried about?
Put it in a public,
do you?
In a blind trust.
Come on, you don't think that's what this guy, with all his money at my age, at 78 years, 77 years old, something like that, is thinking about making a couple of bucks more. No, he wants to be president. He was.
Right.
He sees himself as having been a good mayor. He thinks he has those administrative skills. He wants to do it, and he's investing a good deal of money. Although, $30 million is a $5 tip for you.
Yep. I'm just saying he's a strategic thinker.
What'd you say?
I'm saying he's a strategic thinker. He's approaching this strategically. I don't know what he wants. I haven't heard that much about what he, aside from this video, this launch video, this commercial, about what he wants for America. It matters to me.
I've been watching him for years and years and years. We all know that he wanted to run for president. He became a Republican. He became a Democrat. He looked one way. He looked the other way. But now, time is up. Because as we have often said, or I have often said, quoting myself, there may not be term limits in America, but God has term limits. and this is it. It's now or never, and he's going to go for it.
Did somebody say that he's at 20% in the opinion poll?
I said so.
What's the threshold for the next debate?
I don't know.
Would he be in?
Less than that.
So he would be in for the next debate, having done none of the... Part of the fray for the last
Come on, Sarah. Year. Come on. So let's assume he's in. Okay, he's assumed. We only have a minute.
Yep, less than
I
that.
I want to remind you of that. We only have less than
a
minute.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
But let's assume that he gets in. Is it the debate, which everybody got so turned off by this last debate. You know, they thought it was sort of irrelevant because the big boys weren't.
Well, that's because the impeachment hearings had ended moments before, I think. And we really do have to leave this. And I'm sorry to cut you off there, sir.
You should be.
I apologize sincerely-ish. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Jim Hendler, Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson. And did we mention Jim? Yeah, I guess we did. Thank you all for being with us here this morning on this extended roundtable. It'll be back tomorrow morning.
Also extended.
Now, yes. Until the asteroid wipes out humanity, it'll be extended. Now, we have lots more roundtables straight ahead, and you are listening to WAMC Northeast Public Radio.